session number 11926, reel 1.
Mr. Pass, reel 1. I think you were telling me you were born in Swansea.
Yes.
What did your father do for a living, please?
My father was a transport driver, worker on the docks. Working on the docks, a transport worker.
Did you go to school in Swansea?
Yes.
How old were you when you left?
I'm 14 years old.
Did you get a job?
Only as an errand boy.
You were telling me that you joined the TA?
1930, as a boy.
Why did you do that?
Well, my father was in the TA, and he was in the First World War as well. And he asked me then if I wanted to join, and I went in as a drummer boy.
Which regiment was that?
6th Welsh Regiment.
What kind of training did you get in the TA?
Only just playing the drums or whatever I was in, and then after that, then I joined the signals in the 2 years. But then after that, when I got about another year or two older, then I went into the ranks then, in other words, the rifles. And then after 3 years of it then, I couldn't find a job. And 3 of us then joined the regular army. We'd already been on a course up to Cardiff, Maindy Barracks. That's where the Welsh Regiment was. And we suggested then to join the army. The regular army. We joined them for 7 years. But the 3 of us then, we kept together then all the time up until Aldershot.
Who were the 3?
A mate of mine, or 2 mates of mine. One now is living in Johannesburg. He emigrated to Johannesburg. But the other boy, I don't know really what happened to him, because he got shifted to the 2nd Battalion in India. That is in no, 1934, and I never knew anything about him since then. He lived up by here, but his parents had moved or got killed or what, I don't know.
But you never went abroad?
No, only 1939, when all of the battalion, before the war, the whole of the battalion shifted to Palestine. And we were out in Palestine then when the war started.
What were you doing in Palestine?
Well, out in the frontier. Fighting all of what they call it, you know, the rebels and all that.
Do you remember when you went to Palestine?
In, I think it was March 1939.
How did you get to Palestine?
By troop ship. HMS Somersetshire.
Through the Mediterranean?
Yes, by Bay of Biscay. We stayed in Gibraltar for a couple of days because the Italian fleet was doing manoeuvres in the Mediterranean. And we had to stay there till they finished their manoeuvres.
And this was the First Welsh, was it?
First Welsh, yes.
Do you remember which company you were in then?
I was in HQ.
And what job did you have in 39?
I was a lorry driver then, and an escort trolley driver, taking rations out to different companies which were separated, one company here, one company there, one company here, somewhere else then. And then I'd taken over company battalion commanding officers, escort driver. Well, then after we shifted then from Palestine.
Excuse me, before you shift from Palestine, where were the First Welsh stationed in Palestine?
Safad. And then.
Whereabouts in Safad?
Right in the centre of Safad, the little small village there. And then the companies then, different companies, one was in Jish, Al Malakia, another one in Jebel Kanam. I can't remember where the other one was. There was four companies rather, and HQ, Battalion HQ. Well, Battalion HQ was in Safad.
And was there much trouble there whilst you
were there? Nothing much there, no. No, nothing at all there.
When you say you were right in the middle of Safad,
In the small town.
What were you living in, tents or what?
No, in rooms. No tents, in rooms.
Were you billeted on the...
The billeted then, billeted, but taken over by the army, whatever they were, you see.
What about the inhabitants in Safad? Were they...
Were Palestinians and, well, we don't know who they were, Jews and everything.
Were they friendly or unfriendly?
Yeah, pretty friendly. But we were only, we barricaded off the main road, right and left, you had about 200 or 300 yards space. You couldn't go beyond that track, the barbed wire, and you couldn't go beyond the barbed wire there. If you went out there to go into the other companies, especially in a place called Jebel Canaan, to fill up with petrol, you had to have an escort with you. And you also have a rifle with you, your two rifles. And then come back then and you was all right.
Why Jebel Canaan? What was the problem there?
Well, there was a company there, and they had all the petrol and stuff there, and all the oil for the MP section. And then we used to fill up every so often then.
Was there ever any shooting in Palestine that you were involved in?
Oh, yes. We killed a couple of rebels there. One NCO, he riddled him with a Bren gun, cut him more or less in half.
Did you see that?
I seen that, yeah.
Where was that?
Oh, well, I can't remember where it was. It was just outside Safad. And the fella, he was riding a donkey. And the NCO asked him to stop, shouted to him to stop. He wouldn't stop, so he just let him have it. And he more or less cut him right through.
Did he have orders to shoot if...
Well, you've got to. You've got to have orders then, like that. If they won't stop, well, you've got to let them have it. Well, then after
that... Why do you think this man didn't stop?
But
why do you think this man didn't stop?
Well, quite possible that he could have been a warrior, call it. It's like a kind of a rebel, if you like, or he could have had something on him.
How old was he?
Oh, you say about middle-aged. The beard, well, you can't see him now. When they got the dark beards on, you don't know really how old they are then, you see. Well, and after that, then I was taken on a bring and carrier course at Sarafan. About 6 or 7 of us in the battalion. And then we finished our course then. And we had word then to meet the party now from the regiment in Lida Station. And it took us then down to Alexandria, and then from Alexandria then to Mersma True.
When was this?
In about November 1939. And then we took over Brengen carriers then. We had about half a dozen Brengen carriers there then. Well, after being there for about 6 months, we shifted down to Alexandria.
What were you doing at Mersma True?
Well, the Italians, the Libyans was at war. And British had their troops further on by Benghazi and Tobruk and everyone. And we were this side of the world war. Well, eventually then our troops advanced and everything and took Benghazi and everything. Like. Well, after that then we shifted to Alexandria and we were doing escort duties there then. It is more or less like a kind of a rest camp. And we were doing escort duties, ammunition escorts to Ismailia. And then prisoner of war escorts then by boat from Libya, from Tobruk or Benghazi. And then hospital guards with the boys then being shell-shocked and everything up the front. And then I was on an escort then, I think it is up to Ismailia, ammunition escort. When I come back into the camp, to the barracks rather, in Alexandria, we'd seen it all over to north of the rest of the battalion. We were all packed up, ready to move. We had to pack all our stuff up easy. And then I got left behind. We'd be on a rare party with the take the transport to Crete. We didn't know where we were going. Well, the battalion had already gone then. Well, we had to wait for a party that was on an escort. And I think that is it was an Afi escort up the desert way somewhere. And they hadn't come back at a certain time, and we had to make our way. So we made our way from Alexandria then to Crete. We didn't know where we were going. We lost our escort, our Navy escort, and we had to come over on our own then. Well, eventually then we arrived in Crete. That is in March, I think it's March the 1st, 1940.
Whereabouts in Crete did you arrive?
In Chania. Ceuta Bay then, Ceuta Bay, Chania. Well, then we were there for about a couple of weeks, the beginning of March, which I got there. And then naturally then I got shifted up then to Malamy. An NCO and two private or two drivers, they bring in carriers. And we were
what rank did you hold then?
Only a private. And then we went up to Malamy and we were attached to the New Zealanders.
What was the idea of attaching you to the New Zealanders?
Well, the point was this. Now, Greece had fallen. They had lost all their stuff, all their armour and everything. We had to do the best we could on Crete to supply those with stuff.
So they needed drivers?
I was the driver, and it was two men or two or three men, and New Zealanders was in the section with my Webrang and carrier. And the other one then was a Lance Corporal and a driver from the Welsh. And then he got made up then with the New Zealanders then. Well, after being there now for a couple of days in Malamy, that's when the German troops come across. The German paratroopers come across.
Excuse me, which New Zealand regiment was it that you were attached to?
I couldn't tell you from that date of this one.
When you first met the New Zealand troops, what impression did they make on you? Were they like British troops?
Oh, yes, they were more or less like British troops, got very pally and all that business. Well, anyway, as I say, the Germans come across.
Can you describe in detail, step by step, what you remember of the German attack?
Well, as I say, now, I was on this road. Up above the road, there was a bank up on the road. And my blinking carrier was there, and the other, my H was a bit further. We were watching the road leading down to Malamy. Well, when the paratroopers came across, we were using our rifles and our Bren gun. And there was a dip down over the road, a kind of a valley affair. And there was one paratrooper come down and landed. And did you know what it is? Get behind cover as fast as possible. Well, instead of him unloosening his parachute, he pulled his parachute to get behind cover. And the NCO that is with me then in New Zealand, they turned around and said to me, Cliff, he says, face you were bringing carrier right to that spot, to a bush it was. And that's what I'd done. He says, okay, he says, fair enough. And he let him have it. Well, we didn't see nothing about him then afterwards. But
do you think he was killed?
Oh, he's bound to have been killed. He must have left about 500 rounds going into him. Well, in the evening then, we got... we used to take him positions now a bit further up the road. And there was a German soldier on the road already dead, and we had to bypass him. We couldn't go over him, although he was dead. But we couldn't get out the Brengen car in case we might have had it ourselves. You see, somebody might have sniper or something like that. Well, when we got up this position then, the second night, I think it was, about midnight, the NCO had turned around that word from somewhere that we'll have to shift. I had to leave my Brengen carrier there and all my stuff that is in it. And what I did, I pierced the petrol tank with my bayonet, and I also took a part of the carburetor out so that the Germans couldn't use it. So we were told then to go down into the valley with all the rest of the boys. There might have been around 400 or 500 men there. And there was an officer then turned around and said then that they more or less surrounded us. But he said, if you can possibly get through them just before the daylight, go down the main road from Malmy to Souda Bay. Get two men there, another 20 yards behind, another two men, so and so all the way. And as we were making our way down there, then the Stukas was coming down, strafing us. Well, eventually then, we got them to Galatos. That's where our battalion made the last stand. That is before that, though. Well, after a while then, after about two nights, the New Zealanders turned around and said to me, you have to find my own regiment. I said, where are they? We didn't know. Well, anyway, I went down before it was getting late in the morning, and I seen an officer, and he was a brigadier. And I asked then, where was the Welsh regiment? And he asked me who I was. I turned around and told him who I was and where I had been. So he turned around and told me, he says, well, the 1st Welsh Regiment are the other side of Carnia. So, right, I started making my way. Now, Carnia was absolutely burning. Eventually then, just before it got light, but might have been about 6 o'clock in the morning, I picked up my battalion. Well, I had no gear. Only just my rifle and a bandolier of about 50 rounds of ammunition. So the officer then, my platoon officer, turned around and said to me, where was the rest of my stuff, my clothing and things like that? I told him what had happened. That's all I was in. A pair of slacks and a KD shirt. KD slacks, KD shirt. And there we are. So they turned around and gave me another dead person's equipment, such as water bottles and stuff like that. Well, anyway, later on in the night, or later on in the day rather, the Germans were coming around bombing us all the time. They wouldn't let us have no peace. Well, then, in the darkness then, we shifted from there then, through Carnia, and up until the last stand that we made towards Galatas. There was other battalions in Galatas, but I was in the edge of Carnia. And with that then, the following morning, our commanding officer turned around and said to us, right, we'll have to make the best you can, everybody for himself. So we made our way then, a couple of us down towards Souda Bay. And then
up to Souda Bay?
Souda Bay. That's in Carnia. Well, anyway, we were in kind of a big hole there, and there'd been about 30 or 40 of us. And then all of a sudden, we had word then from the Germans. Drop your arms. They're all surrounded.
Where were you at this time exactly?
In Souda Bay.
But whereabouts in Souda Bay?
On the outskirts of Souda Bay. Lay down your arms, he says, and then you're all surrendered. Well, after that, then, we lay down our arms, and then overnight, then, they took us to a field, or a kind of a farmhouse, or whatever it was. And there we stayed, they were surrounded. And then in the morning, then, they took us further up then to the old hospital, which is a big marquee. And we met quite a few of our other mates there and everything, you know, and other English soldiers and this and that. And we were there then for a few days.
What impression did the German troops make on you when they captured you, when you first saw them close up?
Oh, well, I thought myself they were well organized. They were well organized.
How do you mean?
Well, they had the equipment there, and they looked as if there was nothing could stop them.
Did their equipment impress you?
Oh, they had the big khaki, not khaki, kind of greyish overcoats on. They had the steel helmets and everything, ammunition and everything was on them. That's more than what we had. Well, then we were in this camp, and there was a lorry coming in there one night. And we went toward the lorry, and there was only one guard around it. So what it was, that there was sacks of bread on this lorry, and the guard was walking around and coming back. Well, as he was walking around one side, so we were slipping the bags, the sacks. And I pinched two loaves of bread, and those loaves of bread were as hard as the table there.
Well, were you very hungry?
Oh, we were starving. We had no food for days. Well, anyway, we had a 4-gallon petrol tin, and we soaked the bread in a sheet off a bed, and it was none too clean.
Where did you get the sheet from?
From the beds, one of the beds out in this hospital camp. We soaked the bread the following morning, and we tied the bread up in the sack and the cloth and a couple of raisins, and we boiled this bread pudding. Well, then instead of us putting something in the bottom of the tin to take the heat away from the sack, from the cloth, we didn't do it. But the boy was smelling, it was lovely and all that business, no? And they turned around and says, "Come on, Cliff, it's about time it is cooked." So we strained the water out, caught out of the cloth. It's only the cloth had come out. The simple reason why, the cloth had burnt down inside it, because we hadn't put something inside the tin. But anyway, we ate it. Tommy would tell you that himself, because he was with them. He was one of them. We ate it, and then after, well, a couple of days afterward, then we were cooking scrounging parties with an NCO, pick up food then from any garden, and it's supposed to have gone back into the cookhouse in this camp. But we used to keep half of it.
So the Germans weren't keeping a close watch on you?
No, they were a guard there, and we were allowed out. As long as we had an NCO, a sergeant, in charge of us. And we'd be allowed out for so long, and then we had to come back and report then to this guard then on the guard gate. Well, eventually when some of us was out there now, we were coming across the dead, and the Germans was out there. They were everywhere. They'd call us, right? Bury you a dead. Could be the Germans as well. So anyway, a few weeks out of that, we got shifted then into Crete. As they say, you know, we marched then from there, then from the camp to Ceuta Bay. And there was an Italian freighter there. And we all had to go down into the hold. And they wouldn't let us out of that hold, not even fresh air. So anyway, the next thing we knew then, we was a few days on that on our freighter. The next thing we knew then, we were being discharged. We had to crawl up, get up the ladder, and then onto the quayside, and we were in Salonika.
How many had been on this ship? Was it hundreds or thousands?
Hundreds. Well, no, I don't think it'd been thousands. It might have been 1,000, or it could have been 700, 800, 900.
Like a battalion.
And then they took us up to the Greek barracks.
What were conditions like at Salonika?
Oh, it was horrible. I can give you a couple of I don't want to shift now in case
we can
I do
look
that.
At it later. We can look at it later.
And, they were absolutely lousy. We could sleep there in the night, and we could go outside in the daytime. We'd strip our shirts off, and we'd have a look at the seams, and we should have seen a lice that is on them. Absolutely lousy. Well, then, we'd might have to parade us every day, and it might take around about 50 or 60 or 70 men, right? A couple of working parties, and he'd be out all day, whatever work it was, then clearing this up or clearing that up, and they'd be a bit of a cookhouse there for with a stew, a basin of stew, with horse flesh and everything. Well, after a couple of weeks then, as you say, what Tom said that as well, the train come in for us, and the ship did, and I think we were on it for about 10 days.
Just before we go on further, I think there were two camps at Salonika, were there?
Yes, Tom went to the one camp, and he escaped from there.
Yes, that wasn't the camp you were in.
No, Tommy said that there's a railway there now, apparently, on that camp that he escaped from. But I was only in the one camp I was. But as they say, Tom then was in the other camp.
How did the Germans behave in Salonika camp?
Well, I tell you what. Now, as we were marching up now from the boat, from the quayside to the barracks, the Greek people now, which was watching us now and all that business, you know, it seems a crowd watching of any parade, they were waving to us. But the Germans then caught them, right? And up the barracks they had to go. And they got interrogated and they got beaten up and all that business.
Just for waving to you.
And as you say, then after about 10 days then we were on the train. We'd had some rations. There was about 30 of us in a cattle truck. And they wouldn't allow us out. And we stopped in Belgrade. Right in the station of Belgrade, I seen a word and up in Belgrade for water. And then after that, then I travelled on again. And I found myself in Wolfsburg in Austria. And it was a big camp then in Austria. And Frenchmen and everybody, Italians and everybody was there. Well, they deloused us and all our kit. And they took all particulars of us then. And they gave us a number, a prisoner of war number. And my prisoner of war number was 3313. And then after a while then, getting fed up, they asked us then, they wanted working parties to go out to different places. Could be at about 50 or 60 miles away. But the first camp we went to, I can't remember the name now, we were on a job there